totally at the World Cup.
Здравствуй. We take you to quarters now. Пожалуйста.
Unbelievable this.
Into the knockouts with the game of the tournament. France 4, Argentina 3. Argentina left unhappy by Mbappe. He is Kylian. His performance was thrilling. He's worth 180 million.
Now he cannot stop.
And on a big night for PSG forwards, Edinson electric as Uruguay turn out Portugal 2-1. For them, on Friday, it's a big quarterfinal meeting with France. Sunday, another pair of quarterfinalists decided as Spain take on Russia at the Luzhniki and Croatia meet Denmark in Nizhny Novgorod. It's all coming up on the Totally Football Show and the World Cup. Sensational day of World Cup action, listener. And to discuss that and so much more, James Horncastle.
Hello.
Jack Lang.
Good evening.
Tom Williams.
Hello.
Wow, what a start to the knockout stages of the 2018 World Cup. Tom?
Sensational. Clearly the group phase was absolutely fantastic, and I suppose a fear that we've all harboured since is that the knockout phase might prove to be a little bit cagier, but couldn't have asked for a better start with that absolutely thrilling France-Argentina game, and hopefully that now sets the scene for the rest of the knockout games.
Well, yeah. And immediately the one on Saturday evening that followed that incredible 4-3 match between France and Argentina was pretty special itself. But, Jack, I feel we need to begin with the seven-goal thriller this afternoon, the first World Cup game in history to finish 4-3 in 90 minutes.
Yeah, amazing stat, that. And I think just a madcap game that never felt that it was settled. There always seemed to be something going on. You had the momentum shifting both ways. It looked like France were going to run away with it at some point. Then Argentina somehow clawed their way back into it. France went again, and then Argentina still managed to set up a dramatic finish with that late Aguero strike. And it was the kind of game you couldn't really take your eyes off.
Steve C, among one or two people tweeting in, "Don't cry 4-3 Argentina," which is pretty neatly done. It was a day, James, that saw the World Cup lose football's two biggest stars, Messi in the afternoon, Ronaldo in the evening, but enshrine the newest football megastar in Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah, and I think this was a performance from France that I think we've been waiting for, at least from some of their individuals. And for Mbappe, when he won the penalty for the first goal, it was reminiscent for me of Michael Owen breaking away against Argentina in 1998. Of course, Owen scored, Mbappe gets taken down, but just to see the breathtaking pace with which he left at least three Argentine players in his dust was incredible. And he looked on it from the get-go. Before that penalty, he actually won the free kick from which Griezmann hit the bar. And you just knew that you were in for a special afternoon, at least from Mbappe. I don't think we could foresee the rest of it unfolding in the manner that it did, but he truly delivered.
Julian McFarlane tweeting, "Liberté, égalité, Mbappé." Very nice. France in the opening 15-20 minutes looked so dominant. Mm. They looked like the World Cup was theirs for the taking. And then they let Argentina back into this, or Argentina fought their way back in. What happened, Jack?
Yeah, I think it's something funny about this France team that even when everything looks set up for them to gain a bit of momentum, to really push on, there's, I don't know whether it's conservatism or something that comes from the manager, but they just slightly shrunk into their shells again. And you rightly said in that opening period, Mbappe's pace was terrorising them. Every Argentina corner looked like a chance for France, the way they would just break the other end of the pitch. But yeah, somehow it just slightly slipped away from them. You have to say, though, that both of Argentina's goals were from nothing. Mm. I mean, granted, France should have closed down Angel Di Maria for that first goal. And, you know, the second goal wasn't amazing defending by any means. But they were both goals from nothing, I would say, rather than from any real pattern of play that Argentina put together.
Well, there were seven goals in total, and the momentum, as you mentioned, swinging back and forth. Just a roller coaster ride, I'd call this game. It began with that early period of pressure, which paid off with a penalty which Marco Rojo conceded, because basically there was nothing else he could do, I guess, with Mbappe blasting past him, and Griezmann puts that away. But then, completely against the run of play, comes an extraordinary equaliser from Angel Di Maria.
Into the middle. Big drive! Goal! It's time! Di Maria!
Well, to quote Danny Dyer, he absolutely David Cameron that.
He did. As Jack was saying, Argentina hadn't really had a chance, and France made the mistake of being so obsessed with looking at where Messi was. They left this huge gap. But even so, Di Maria takes aim from 30 yards. He's not really had a kick in the first half. Absolutely smashes one into the top right-hand corner. France find themselves 1-1 at half-time. And then within minutes of the restart, find themselves a goal behind. Again, a goal that it's hard to attach too much blame for. They half-clear a free kick.
Messi gets
to Messi,
it.
Who puts it back in. And it sort of hits Gabriel Mercado, Lloris's wrong-footed. And then we found ourselves in this situation where France, having played very well and having deservedly taken the lead, find themselves behind. And the question then is, can they react? Are we going to find out what this France team has got, you know, going for them?
And the answer is, it's got this.
Fired! Time.
Oh my gosh!
Two.
Oh my!
First international goal.
Look at the spin on that.
Absolutely stunning goal by Benjamin Pavard. Absolutely nothing Armani could do. Doesn't get his feet set. This thing travels in the back of the net.
Woohoo! Goal of the tournament for now,
yeah,
Jack?
I think so. It was obviously reminiscent of Nacho's for Spain, but I think the difficulty level was slightly higher. The ball was almost
this
hip-height,
is the right
really.
Back, effectively.
This is, yeah, Benjamin Pavard, who not even really a right back at all times, you know, plays centre back for Stuttgart.
Right.
Looked somewhat uncomfortable when he has to go forward. Like, I think he's a decent player, but he's by no means a natural attacking fullback.
He had also given away the free kick for Argentina's second goal.
And played Mercado one side. Mm.
Wow. Okay, so now he's wandered upfield, but not that far upfield. He's a long way out from goal.
Yeah, I think he's outside the D. The ball is almost at hip height, which I would say differentiates it from the Nacho one. And he kind of cuts across and under it, sending the ball spinning in a beautiful trajectory, really, just curling into the top corner. Best thing about it, I think, was there was one camera angle. The France subs were warming up behind the advertising hoardings, and there's one camera angle, and the ball just is flying towards Corentin Tolisso's face, who's just absolutely loving it and just kind of greeting the ball. It's just a gorgeous goal.
Magnificent.
And even in the build-up, you have this fantastic pass from Blaise Matuidi down the inside left channel to Lucas Hernandez, who just gets to it before it reaches the byline and cuts it back. So you have one fullback crossing for the other, which is a very un-Deschamps thing. He generally likes his fullbacks to play a bit more conservatively, but they both got forward, and yeah, absolutely sensational goal.
Wow. And then
Matuidi, pass for Giroud, Mbappé, ninguém o para.
Lindo gol. Que bonito. 4-2
para a França.
Killian Moon, killing me softly. Killian in the name of. Mbappé steps up with, at an age, James, when statistically you're more likely to be dying in the Vietnam War. He scores two goals in 3 minutes at the World Cup.
Well, the last teenager to do that at a World Cup was Pelé.
Stop.
Famously. So he's in good company there. But that third goal, talk about making space where there is none. Just with exceptional speed, the ability to get it out of his feet, and then put it away. And again, France had got in down Argentina's right-hand side. From then on, you just thought, nah, it's not coming back for Argentina now. It's over. The fourth goal, again, was just an illustration of just how easy it was for France to cut through this Argentina side with just maybe three or four passes, and they were there from one end of the other, and they were in. And of course, it helps when you've got someone with not only Mbappe's pace, but Pogba's ability to drive with the ball. He was just able to just shrug off people, you know, cover so much ground, and had an excellent game, I thought.
Are France going to win the World Cup?
You'd certainly back them a lot more now than you would have done before that game. And I think you'd probably have them down as favourites. on the back of that performance, given that we've not seen what the other big teams are going to do yet in the last 16, the question all along with France has been, can they click? Can they find the winning formula? What we saw from them against Argentina is what they can do against sloppy opposition. They're not going to get anything like as much space against Uruguay in the quarterfinals. So I suppose now the question is how much confidence. I mean, that will have given France an enormous amount of confidence, but the test that faces them in the quarterfinals is very different to the one that Argentina presented them with. So they look for the first time, I think, fully the sum of their parts in that game today. And yeah, the thought of them winning it doesn't seem as remote as I felt it was a few weeks ago.
And possibly they don't feel that either now. It seemed like in that second half that they kind of woke up to their potential as well.
Well, that was the really thrilling thing. It was a team finding its feet. It was France's first real challenge. They'd not turned up prior to that. They'd basically done the bare minimum in the group phase. They'd had 20-25 good minutes in the first half against Peru. Apart from that, it was basically doing the minimum amount and getting through. And we've all been waiting to see this group of individuals click, and we saw that today. And that could be the trampoline that sends them, you know, sends them on to glory.
It's worth saying as well that they're best player, and I know Mbappe is the rising star, but Antoine Griezmann remains their best player, and he had quite a subdued game, I thought. So I think there's still even room for improvement in the final third. You know, if he really comes to the party at the same time as Mbappe does, for example, I think there could be real fireworks.
All right, but why might they not win the World Cup, James?
Well, because I think Argentina gave an example of how not to play against France, which is to play with a high line, to be sloppy, untidy in possession, and to give, you know, one of the fastest players in the world all the space in the world to work with. And I don't think, as Tom said, Uruguay will give them that at all.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Argentina head off. France were merciless. The quarterfinals will be messiless. Mm. But they will have Uruguay. And after their 2-1 victory Saturday night against Portugal, once again, two very special goals from a PSG forward, Tom.
Yes, Edinson Cavani. And I think he's had a really impressive tournament. I mean, I don't think he scored until the last minute of the final group game. But I thought he looked sharp right from the start of the tournament in a way that Luis Suarez didn't. Suarez looked short of fitness, looked a little bit sluggish. Cavani has just looked on it right from the start. Right. And then we saw tonight against Portugal peak Cavani, not just the two goals, the header, that lovely side foot finish, but also just the hard work. I mean, there was one point in the first half where he ended up covering back at left back. So he really set the tone for the entire performance with his industry and then ends up being the match winner with the two goals.
Actually, it's fair to say that Griezmann was doing a similar job for France, tackling back and robbing Messi of the ball in the penalty box.
Yeah, he did. Both very diligent players.
Yeah. Two fabulous goals. The first one, James, I think is your favourite ever breakaway header goal, is it? Something like that.
Favourite 1-2 goal.
Favourite 1-2.
We hear so much in match analysis about strikers not being close enough together. These two could not have been further apart in the build-up. It's a magnificent 1-2. First, the pass. We were all sat on the sofa watching this and we're like, wow, that is an incredible ball he's just played out to the opposite flank to Suarez. Obviously, the camera then zooms in on the Barcelona forward. You lose all track of Cavani. The ball comes straight back.
But Suarez doesn't. He's watching him.
Exactly. Picks him out perfectly. And, you know, opt to tell me that since 1966, only two other strike duos have combined for more World Cup goals than Uruguay's Edinson Cavani and Suarez this tournament with four. And that's Lato and Scharmach for Poland and Balak and Miroslav Klose for Germany. So
remarkable. But what, you're quite right, marks this goal out is the distance, the sheer distance and ease with which they could find themselves at such long range.
And also the finish, which is pretty unorthodox. I think, you know, you needed maybe 2-3 different camera angles to finally isolate whether it was his cheek, whether it was his chest, whether it was his shoulder. Regardless of what it was, the fact that he was able to control it and direct it on goal, and you still see him follow through as if he's heading the ball. Just a magnificent finish from Cavani, who scored the winner with Uruguay's only shot in the second half. They had 30% possession after the interval, which just goes to show once they got in front, they were quite happy to basically just, Godin, Jimenez, we're going to back you to close this out, and close it out they did.
For all that, though, Portugal did equalise. Pepe, with the first goal that Uruguay have conceded all year.
Yeah, a rare bit of, I think, miscommunication between the Uruguay centre-backs. It wasn't too clear whether he was Diego Godin's man or Jose Maria Jimenez's man, and that hardly ever happens with Uruguay. The first goal they've conceded in almost 600 minutes, as you said. And, yeah, I think that would be a slight concern for them. But you look at how the game developed after that, Uruguay taking the lead again. And although Portugal monopolised possession in those final stages, I don't think they ever looked like they were really banging on the door. They were getting the ball out to the fullbacks a lot, who were crossing very poorly, I think. Rafael Guerreiro on the left looks a player bereft of confidence. And on the other side, Ricardo Pereira, who's Leicester bound, I thought his delivery was poor in the main. And they were just lumping crosses in and didn't think they were really making much headway.
Ronaldo did his shorts thing for that free kick, but to no avail. But then, really, really worryingly, Cavani going off with what I think is it a calf injury? Is that what they're saying?
Looked like a calf injury, yeah. He had his calf taped when he was sitting on the bench. And by the faces he was pulling as he went off, he looked to be in a lot of discomfort. And also at the final whistle, we saw him sitting on the bench with his head down, looking quite glum. And given that the next game is only on Friday, you suspect that's probably him out of it, unless the Uruguay medical staff can work a miracle.
Yeah, we have seen some remarkable comebacks. Or we're about to. They're saying that Kvist might be playing for Denmark tomorrow, despite having two broken ribs and a punctured lung.
Is that
right?
Punctured lung as well.
Yeah. In the opening group game for Denmark, and also who's the other player who's coming back?
Alan Jagoyev.
Yeah.
So it can be done.
Fingers crossed, because if Cavani's not available for Uruguay when they take on France, I mean,
it's probably going to be Spelling fan Christian Stuani, formerly of Middlesbrough.
So, yeah, it's not entirely the same thing.
Not at all, no.
Right.
A big step down.
Okay, if Cavani does play, can Uruguay halt the incredible French Mbappe-powered machine thing?
I think they can. I think their midfield tonight, I thought Bentancur, who's received a lot of hype, I thought he delivered tonight with some... I think when he needed to look after the ball, he did that very well for Uruguay. And we've seen this team not need too many chances. Like Suarez's hold-up play at times to just take a little bit of pressure off the defence was impressive. I think they will miss if Cavani's not there, that ability to just track back and add an extra man, not only in midfield but sometimes in defence. But if he is fit, yes, I think they can do it.
All right. Well, we'll find out Friday, as you say, Tom. That quarterfinal will be coming up. Sunday, meantime, we'll be finding out another two quarterfinals. Awfully exciting, this. When Spain, Russia, Croatia and Denmark go at it, we'll talk about them after this.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable this.
Yes, yes, yes.
What a great World Cup for great World Cup goals this has been, Jack. Cavani's today, that Di Maria one, that was pretty special. The Pavard, insane. I mean, what's your top 10 of top World Cup goals from this tournament?
A whole top 10?
Yeah. I mean, there's loads. I reckon we'll fill up dead easy. All right, go on. You've got Pavard.
Parfait from Pavard.
Parfait, oh, nice.
Nacho, as we're on the similar one.
Quaresma's.
His Trivella. That was a lovely goal. I
thought Dennis Cheryshev, another outside of the foot job.
Yeah.
Messi against Nigeria.
Messi's thigh toe thwack.
I thought Isco for Spain was a lovely team goal. Yeah.
Mertens, you remember that dipping one?
Feels like a long time ago, that
doesn't
one.
Doesn't it? Now.
Coutinho against Switzerland, where it was out until it was in.
What was that? Was that a kind of bending? Yeah. I can't remember that at all. Yeah.
Son Heung-min against Mexico, yeah. Similar vein, right. Another curve.
Modric
against
Pow.
Argentina.
Yeah. Shaqiri? Yeah, maybe. No, okay, maybe
Toni
not.
Toni Kroos against Sweden?
Well, I suppose. And what about Harry Kane's penalty, eh?
Which one, though?
Two solid penalties.
Well, they were both great. I don't think anyone's taken a penalty as well as Harry.
Well, Andries Granqvist scored a good penalty the other day.
Yeah, he did.
Similar,
yeah.
And he's a centre-back, so... Mm.
Goals, eh? For me, some of the best bits of football.
They're always a highlight.
Yeah.
Always a highlight.
Talking of goals, interesting, oh, yeah. I mean, this isn't a new point, everyone's been talking about it all night, but the fact that neither Ronaldo nor Messi have scored a knockout stage goal at a World Cup now, between them, it's 1,270 minutes.
That's remarkable.
Of knockout football without a goal, isn't it?
And yet, the Champions League, they'll happily bang them in. Yeah. You know, in the knockout stages, whatever.
That's an awful lot of, you know, it's over 14 games, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, just contributed to tonight.
Do you feel the World Cup has lost something with those two exiting here?
Well, it's a bit of a goat cull, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, well, obviously it's lost a lot of talent, but it's also lost a very tedious debate. So I think we can be happy about that.
So neither of them are the best player of all time. There you go.
But, I mean, today might be the end of the Messi-Ronaldo thing, or it might be the beginning of the end, perhaps, in
right.
that they've been the two best players in the world for the last 10 years, mm-hmm. and at some point they won't be the two best players in the world anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Is Ronaldo going to win the Ballon d'Or just on the back? I say just on the back of winning the Champions League, but if there's a superstar, if Mbappe leads France to World Cup glory,
if Benjamin Pavard does it with France,
so this
Harry Kane
this
scores more penalties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
A changing of the guard.
There's history to be written quite literally in the next fortnight. And it begins on Sunday, actually, Tom, with two exciting games at the Luzhniki in Moscow. Spain take on Russia. While in the evening game on Sunday in Nizhny Novgorod, Croatia are up against Denmark. Wow. I know which game I want to talk about, and it's not Croatia-Denmark. Spain-Russia. Russia-Spain. Is there any way that the Russians, remember, supremely unfancy coming into this tournament, can halt the Spaniards? Let's hear from our friend Sasha Gurionov.
The way that the Russians should approach this game is death or glory. I think they should stick to the 4-2-3-1 that started the Egypt game. And I think they should press Spain into mistakes. And we saw that Spain didn't really like it up them against Morocco. They also struggled against Iran. However, I mean, it's worth pointing out that Iran and Morocco are two pretty decent defensive sides who have been playing in a particular style for quite some time, unlike this Russia team, which has adopted this style like 2 weeks before the tournament. But the energy with which the Russians played the first two games was very impressive. Of course, afterwards, it's led to all sorts of insinuations. But I think, as we saw against Uruguay, those Russians weren't quite superhuman and they were going to have a game off. Of course, the sending off didn't help of the right-back Smolnikov, but at the same time, Zhurkov had a rest, Golovin had a rest, Golovin was on the yellow, so they're going to come back in, and it is a game of their lives, as Dzyuba said today. They have absolutely nothing to lose. They should have nothing to fear. I think the crowd will be very supportive, and for Russia, it's sort of sailing into unknown territory, trying to win a playoff match at the World Cup. But if you look at the history, even the USSR team, the great USSR sides of 60s and 70s and 80s, they only ever won two games after the first round. One was in 66 against Hungary, and the other one was in 82 in that 22nd group stage against Belgium. So for me, I think the Russians should approach this without any sort of fear at all, tear into the Spaniards, perhaps rattle them, and maybe see if they can get a game of it. If they lose, well, so what? If they win, this will be the greatest win in the history of Russian football. And if you look at the weather forecast in Moscow tomorrow, probably 2021, a bit of rain. The Russians should be able to put in that energetic performance that we're all hoping for.
All right, so that's the weather in the Moscow region tomorrow. But what a huge game this is. What an amazing atmosphere they'll have at the Luzhniki, James.
Yeah, I think two of their three games in the group stages in Moscow. I think Thiago Alcantara, the Spain midfielder, was talking about this yesterday, saying, we're not just going to be playing against 11 Russians. We're going to be playing against millions.
Right. Of course, Spain have some history. They've have experience of playing against host nations.
Mm.
South Korea,
yeah,
when they went out unexpectedly. And I'm going to say it's not beyond the realms of possibility that Russia could do them here. Spain have only won one game so far. They only won one game in the group stages. Morocco very nearly had them, had it not been for that highly controversial Aspas goal at the death. Essentially, had Morocco had more favourable refereeing, they might have got the result against Spain. And if there's one thing we can expect Russia to have on Sunday, it's favourable refereeing.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Spain's defence, which has been the cornerstone of their success in previous major competitions. And I don't think it's as strong as it was. We've seen sloppy errors, but also just a lack of communication at times. They've conceded five already in their group. They've only kept two clean sheets in the last eight. And if Russia want inspiration, they only have to look back to November when they played out a 3-3 draw.
Yeah, they met, they played, Spain. It was 3-3. Spain needed two Sergio Ramos penalties to get a point or to get a draw in that. Are they going to get penalties easily tomorrow? I'm not so sure, Jack.
Possibly not. And that, it's worth noting that the teams that day, of the Russian team, probably only Yuri Zhirkov will play here, whereas Spain, relative to what Russia put out, had pretty strong team with their first choice defence. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if Russia could have a little bit of joy against them. It's just whether Russia's own defence will cope with Spain's attacking.
Well, that's a good point, isn't it? When Sasha says that Spain don't like it up them, is that what he's talking about? That whole kind of defensive issue?
Yeah, well, I think as Jack was saying, they've looked very shaky defensively in the group phase. I mean, they're letting 5 goals in 3 games. There were some mitigating factors in the game against Portugal in that one of the goals is a penalty, one of the goals is a Cristiano Ronaldo worldie, and then one of them is a rare David De Gea error, but they're getting a little bit less rare these days. But, you know, we'll put that one down as a one-off. But against Morocco, every time Morocco came at them, they looked in trouble. You had the first goal where Andres Iniesta, Sergio Ramos getting a massive muddle on halfway. Khalid Boutaib lollops through and scores. And there was another occasion later on in the half, a long throw caught them out. Hakim Ziyech with a long throw from the halfway line, and Boutaib again gets in, and it takes a save from De Gea to prevent him from scoring. You also had the weird sight of Gerard Piqué launching himself into a really needless two-footed challenge quite early on in the game. So there's clearly a little bit of fragility there in that Spanish defence. And you've got going up against them Artem Zuber, who is the battering ram centre-forward par excellence. So if there is any fragility and nervousness in that back four, then, you know, they'll be tested.
We're actually sat here talking ourselves into a scenario where we're suggesting that Zuber is a potent weapon that the Spanish should be very, very worried about. I mean, Spain, pedigree-wise, they should be all over the Russians tomorrow, no?
Oh, they should. But if you look at Spain's form in the tournament to date and how bad they've looked defensively, and also how well Russia played in those first two matches.
Against Saudi Arabia and Egypt.
But and then against Uruguay, they were very convincingly beaten 3-0, having rested a number of significant players.
And had a man sent off as well.
And having a man sent off. So it's hard to know how good this Russia team is. I mean, clearly Spain are the favourites. And you tend to think that perhaps, as we saw with France, that getting into the knockout phase, they will just find an extra gear to go into. But there's certainly enough in Russia's first two performances and in the shakiness that we've seen from Spain to give Russia a bit of belief.
Right. Do you believe, Tom? Call this. Call it.
I'm not sure I believe that Russia will win, but I think it will be an interesting game.
Jack?
I think a narrow Spain victory.
James?
I remember watching South Korea knock out Italy in 2002. Wow. So anything can happen when the hosts are in the knockout stages. So yeah, I'm going to go with the motherland.
Are you?
Yeah.
Speaking of South Korea, by the way, these were the scenes, or this was the noise of the scenes, when they returned to Seoul. The players got off the plane, came into the terminal, and were kind of arranged for a special welcoming party. But then people started throwing eggs at them, and, this is really curious, Union Jack cushions. So, Jack, we'd spoken before, I think, about the whole toffee incident at the end of the 2014 World Cup. A listener wrote in and explained the toffee. Hopefully they can do the same. But a real shame, because South Korea, the way they finished the tournament was fantastic against
Germany. Yeah, on a real high note with those late goals against Germany. Obviously, an unforgiving public.
They should have flown back to Mexico before going to Seoul. They would have got a hero's welcome there.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that they would have been greeted with eggs and Union Jack cushions, assuming that is an insult and not a form of
maybe of
gratitude. Yeah. But I think generally the thinking was that South Korea had ended the tournament really impressively, and you know, we won't forget that win over Germany for a long time. But tough crowd in Seoul, it would appear.
Soul crushing.
Croatia taking on Denmark. That's Sunday evening. Let's talk about that after this.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Unbelievable.
Croatia taking on Denmark Sunday evening. this knockout round has been so great so far that I bet this will be a belter and all. Although neither of these teams has conceded from open play yet at this World Cup. Not a single goal, neither of them. Both of them have had a penalty against them. Anyway, producer Ben asked Niels Herold from Danish Eurosport what the Danes' mood was going into this game.
It's been like a civil war between two camps. The one camp is saying it's great that we got through to the final 16. The other camp is arguing that we have been terrible to watch. We only have 20 good minutes against Australia. That's all. And this game is kind of make or break for us. You know, it's like we have to show that we have something to give to the World Cup, because if we go out with a small defeat and we haven't really done something, everybody will forget this World Cup very fast. And trouble in Denmark is we have a big history. You know, in 98, for example, it was the same terrible group stage, and we made two excellent games, the one against Nigeria 4-1 and the defeat against Brazil. And that's what we're measuring right now. You know, it could be like 98. We hope it might be like 98, but there's a doubt creeping in now for what this team really can do.
Nils, it's probably fair to say you're the most underwhelming side left in the competition. So how are you going to get the better of this Croatia team, especially Modric and Rakitic in midfield?
I believe that we have to, as I said before, we have to challenge them up against their own defense, try to get past that beautiful midfield they have. It's a tough task, but we have to set something up. I suspect we're going to see a Danish team playing like they did against Poland in the qualifiers, where we beat them with 4 goals, and against Ireland, more on the flanks, fullbacks up running against their defense. That's the key for Denmark, to try to be more positive and put more into Christian Eriksen's abilities, you know, try to get him set up, because he hasn't really done anything this World Cup. It's been a strange World Cup for Eriksen, because it's been working so much in the defensive part of the field. But now we have to get him set up, try to get him creative, try to get some good stuff going up the field so we can get some entertaining football from Denmark. Because I believe that's the key to beat Croatia. You have to beat them more or less on their own merits, because they are very good coming the other way.
Okay, so a more exciting, more entertaining Denmark, we hope, than the one we saw in their last game, that goalless draw with France. Croatia, though, look like they could be a bit special, huh?
Without doubt. I think they were one of the teams of the group stages, obviously came through with maximum points, probably put in one of the performances as well with that 3-0 win against Argentina. And this is a very clinical team. They've scored with 5 of their last 6 shots. They finish games well. We've seen Dalic make changes and not just disrupt the rhythm at all of this Croatia side. And with that midfield 3, you'd expect them to have a lot that Denmark can't handle. So I think it is being billed as a Modric Eriksen duel this game. Mm-hmm. But I think Eriksen's did actually. When we were talking about goals earlier, we didn't mention Eriksen's was against Australia. That was a fine finish.
Certainly was. Croatia, you mentioned there, the 3-0 victory over Argentina, but also their last group game, 2-1 victory over Iceland, despite making 9 changes to the team. Mm. So they got lots of lovely depth in that squad.
As James was hinting at there, whereas Denmark are very much reliant on Eriksen to inspire them. You look at the other attacking players there, you know, Yusuf Poulsen, Pioni Sisto, kind of middling players who can do something now and again, but not very reliable. Croatia just have a whole gang of midfielders. You know, when Modric isn't doing it, it might be Rakitic or Perisic they can bring on, Brozovic, Kovacic. They've got so many players who can conjure something, even if it's off the bench. And I think they're very durable. They don't mind being patient. I think all but one of their goals has come in the second half. I would expect them to soak up what Denmark have and punish them.
Low scoring, do you think, Tom?
Well, Arge Hereder, the Denmark coach, has said that Denmark are going to have more of a go than they have up to now. And we've not really seen anything from them as an attacking force. And as you said, they've only scored a couple of goals so far. I'm not sure that is the best way to go about it against a team as gifted as Croatia, with so many dangerous attacking players. If grinding their way through games and keeping clean sheets has worked for Denmark up to now, I don't see why they would take the risk of trying to be more proactive against Croatia. And obviously we hope they do, because we want another exciting goal fest. But I think for, you know, for Denmark's chances, it might suit them to keep it cagey, to try and starve Modric and Rakitic and Kovacic of the ball and space as much as possible.
You make a convincing case. What do you think, James?
I think the Croats will go through. I think it's been underplayed. You know, not only the sort of institutional chaos going around this Croatian team and everything surrounding Modric and Lovren, but also the fact that they sent Nikola Kalinic home after, the first game, and yet they haven't let that ruffle their feathers at all.
Very true.
And, you know, we've mentioned the technical ability of this side, but they're a physical bunch as well. And I think when you're playing as a team like Denmark, with the likes of, you know, Simon Kjær at the back, who are kind of, you know, big fellas, you know, when you've got a battering ram like Mario Mandzukic in there as well, that serves them in good stead as well. So I think Croatia have enough to go through in this game.
Jack?
I agree.
All right, then.
2-0 win, maybe.
Okay. Very good. Well, that's Sunday's lineup. Let's get the odds now on those fixtures. Producer Ben, as ever, has been speaking to Paddy Power.
Thanks, Jimbo. Lee Price, you're back. What a day of round 16 action that was, but there's more coming up tomorrow. It's Spain versus Russia, Croatia versus Denmark. Let's talk Spain-Russia first. Are Russia going to do this?
I don't think so, and I am wary of writing them off. They've surprised us throughout this tournament. Spain surely have to start playing football now. They've been indecisive in the group stages, but now's their time. The draw has opened up for them massively. Spain are odds on to win this one. Russia are a lengthy 11-2 for the victory. But if you do fancy some value, Cheryshev, who has scored 3 goals for Russia so far, plus an own goal, is 9-2 to score at any time. I like a bit of that.
Over in Nizhny Novgorod, it's one for the purists, Croatia versus Denmark. Denmark were absolutely shockingly boring against France. France were too, must be said. Croatia have been pretty spectacular so far. Croatia must be favourites here.
Yeah, massively. Denmark are definitely on my bad list. The one match I got to watch uninterrupted from my children, and it was a 0-0 draw, and they were dire. Denmark have a lengthy 4-1 to win this. Croatia odds on at 5-6. Modric, if you like him, is 7-2 for the goal. But I've got a funny feeling Denmark might play for another stalemate, and if you like either team to win on penalties, you can get 4-1 on that.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Now, Tom, Jack, James, that's it for today's show. I know. But we will be back on Sunday. I say we in the broader sense, because clearly you guys are not on Sunday's show, but you will be back later on in this most exciting World Cup tournament. So I look forward to that. Thanks for being with us today. Listener, do return yourself as we round up all the drama of Russia, Spain and Denmark, Croatia. And in the meantime, you can also find us on Twitter at The Totally Show. And as you well know, we're on Facebook too. Excellent. Have a super Sunday, everybody. And we'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. Subscribe now and get the latest episode delivered right to your phone for free. Supporting your team at the World Cup can be a phenomenal experience. But then Beckham boots Simeone, Lampard's goal isn't given, or someone puts on an England shirt and misses a penalty. The highs, more often than not, come with lows. And that's a little bit like life, really. So while we're all supposed to be buzzing with World Cup excitement and lapping up all this football, all that VAR and all those Nigeria kits, remember that someone close to you might be going through one of life's tougher times. Every day, on average, 12 men take their own life in the UK. That's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. Scary, huh? But that's part of the problem. Many of us still feel mental health and suicide are taboo topics, and this can stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it most. That's why we're working with Calm, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. We here at The Totally Football Show believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the ups and the downs, the glorious wins and the embarrassing red cards, the good days and the bad. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that Calm is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, Calm provides a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. They've also got a website which is packed with the kind of info you need if you or any of your mates are having a rough one. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about Calm.